We'll call the February 23rd Game and Fish Committee to order. And the first item is approval of February 16th minutes. Representative Powell moves the minutes. Any questions on the minutes? All in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. All right, the first bill to be heard is House File 579. Representative Powell moves the bill and for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill would authorize a fireman safety volunteer instructor who's got at least 30 years in to get a lifetime deer hunting license. In other words, you'd have to be a volunteer firearms safety instructor for 30 years and then you could qualify for a lifetime license deer hunting. The DNR does do some recognition, and I'm going to read a quote that I think I passed out to all of you. It comes from the Department of Natural Resources. Their commitment to hunter education and safety is seldom recognized by the millions of citizens of this state who enjoy the rich bounty of natural resources that we many times take for granted. It is the volunteer instructors around the state that hold the key to future generations of hunters, the true conservationists. Thank you for a job well done. That is part of a certificate or plaque they do give at some time to volunteers. Now, I have a constituent in my district that requested that I bring this bill. I brought it last year, and I know I'll get some opposition from DNR because of the cost, and they'll probably need to do a fiscal note. But since last year, I've also had several calls from deer hunters inside District 1A up to northern Minnesota requesting that I do proceed with this bill again. So even though none of them are here, there is some vast interest in doing this bill. But overall, basically what the bill does is reward volunteers for their 30 years of service by giving them a license. It's not that they're getting paid for being a volunteer firearms instructor, because they're getting absolutely nothing for doing it, other than I think they do get a couple certificates and a little else that DNR is here and probably can explain better than I can. But the request is that they can actually get a lifetime license or at least something a little more valuable than what they presently have been getting. And with that, I'll stand for questions, and I believe there's probably a couple here that would like to testify too.
Representative Olin, I have a question.
Yes.
Last year, as I recall, you had a bill very similar to this that required 25 years of service.
Right.
And this year it's 30?
Yes, I raised a number of years trying to make a compromise of some sort with the expenses the DNR saw when it was at 25.
Well, what we'll do is we'll save the testimony on the tape, and then next year you can raise it to 35 and 40 the year after, and we'll eventually get the thing passed.
Well, hopefully somebody will come up with a...
I'm just giving you a hard time.
That's all right. Mr. Chairman, what I would suggest is we come up with a creative solution, compromise of some sort, where they give them something and maybe I get everybody peacefully and quietly happy.
Well,
because I understand what you're saying.
We'd have a win-win, peace in the valley. Anyway, Representative Powell, you had a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Olin, would they need to start year one after this bill passed, or would all the previous years before this bill count?
All the previous years would count, Mr. Powell, which means there's probably, I think DNR was telling me there might be as many as 500 as a guesstimate.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you just answered my question there. If that was in reference to the number, of potential 30-year firearm instructors.
That was the number we were discussing earlier. So that's probably a guesstimate number.
Mr. Meyer. We have Mr. Ness wants to testify too, so we'll get to him in a few moments.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Bob Myers, Department of Natural Resources. We do recognize the hard work these individuals provide for us. Our success in safety training would not be eligible there without our dedicated teaching staff. Right now, we're estimating that there's about 300 people who would fall under the requirements of this statute or the bill that would allow people who have been teaching for 30 years or more to receive a lifetime license. And actually, the lifetime license language. Cost of a lifetime license for people over 55 is $383. Those costs are then amortized into the Game of Fish Fund every year of the licenses. So the fiscal note FY10 would be about $115,000 with about $3,000 in ELS costs. So you're looking at about $118,000. Then we're estimating approximately $6,000 a year after that. But we do a lot of recognition for our instructors. Specifically, you know, at 5 years of concurrent service, they receive a pen with the state logo. At 10 years, the men receive a belt buckle. Women receive another token item. 15 years, they receive a Leatherman. 20 years, they receive a print. 30 years, they receive a knife set. 50 years, they receive a watch. Plus, we also do a lot of banquets throughout the state for recognition banquets that people will donate items that will be raffled off and things like that. If this were to move forward, I think we would reevaluate those types of activities that we do and what level of recognition actually is out there for us. So we understand Representative Zolan's constituents' concern, but well, we at the same time, we do a lot of recognition for these folks, and we do appreciate the work that they do.
So. Mr. Meyer, what was the last year threshold that you give something for that? Was it 40 years?
Right, and I can provide more detailed information. There's a 50-year present, and I would assume there's something in there in that 40 years, too. I don't have exactly what that is right now. We haven't got the complete set of information.
Well, I heard it. It suggested that maybe at 60 years as an instructor, you award a walker. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of inquiry, then would the fiscal note include the difference between what you're providing already and the license, the cost of the license that you alluded to earlier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, we could evaluate those costs of what's out there right now. We can include that. This is just a draft calculation based upon the number of individuals we assume would meet the year, the 30 years. And for the most part, Mr. Chair, members, I think everyone that I talk to, I am a certified firearm safety instructor and also a certified bow hunter education instructor. I do a lot of training on a volunteer basis, on a one-to-one through our electronic or internet certification and the bow hunting classes we try to hold once or twice a year. People do it not for the recognition. They do it because of their love of teaching, of working with youth and mentoring and getting them trained and making sure that they are safe. So I can understand Representative Zolan's desires to do this, but the people I talk with would do this no matter what. They would probably do it if they had to pay a small fee every time they did it, actually, because they love doing it so much.
Well, Mr. Meyer, what do we give to the bow instructors and the snowmobile instructors and the ATV instructors? Do we do anything for them, and do they, like, does a snowmobile, the safety person that teaches the class, do they get like a free trail sticker or a free registration on their snowmobile or any of those things?
We do the similar type of recognition for years of service, but that would be the next step, and one that if this were to move forward, I would assume that the snowmobile instructors will want a free trail pass. The ATV instructors may want some type of registration thing. It goes across all the boards that we do provide nominal recognition to our safety training instructors. Actually, this year, for the first time in many years, our snowmobile safety instructors were teaching classes still in January because the need was so high. You have to be born after, I believe it is August 30th or September 1st, 1976, 9, but the ages are a little bit different across the board. But in order to operate a snowmobile, you have to have that safety training certificate, which goes back quite a few years. So it is a good point, Mr. Chair, one that I would assume if this were to pass, you would have other people standing in line looking for their recognition mementos as well.
Mr. Meyer, right now I've got written down bow, snow, ATV, and boat. What other types of safety training does the department administer and authorize?
Mr. Chair, you have trappers. You also have the Advanced Hunter Education Program that's out there. We do clinics that are out there that are part of our Advanced Hunter Ed. I'm trying to see what I'm missing looking at Captain Thorne.
I got both.
Yeah, watercraft. Okay, so the watercraft is online. You can take the test online. There is no actual class.
I got six at the present on the list. So, all right. Are there further questions of Representative Olin? There being none, Representative Powell renews his motion to lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to hear from Mr. Neff. I'm sorry. Representative Powell withdraws the motion. I'm sorry. Welcome, Mr. Neff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lance Neff. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. We neither support or oppose the bill at this point. Our members meet once a month, and we want to take a look at it. However, normally we have opposed free licenses in the past because of the fiscal implications. The question that was answered, and you answered, Mr. Chairman, is how many other instructors are there? I myself am an advanced and educated instructor, and I typically do clinics, specific clinics for waterfowl, youth waterfowl, and wild turkey are my specialties. And been at that since 1985 myself. We think it's admirable that volunteers step forward, and as Mr. Meyer said, many of us do it simply because we love to do it. So we just want some clarification of what exactly. We had read the newspaper, there was hunter education instructors, and the bill says firearm safety instructors, and there are more than just one type of instructor. So we're just looking for clarification, Mr. Chairman.
Question for Mr. Ness. Thank you very much. Ms. Kelleher.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here representing the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. This bill's been introduced in the past, I think at least twice, in the last 5 to 10 years. We have not taken a position specifically on the 30-year limit standard that you had to have been a firearm safety instructor for 30 years. However, as you know, our corporate board meeting is this coming weekend. I'll have a definitive answer then. One thing that I did notice while you're keeping score, and I don't think it makes any difference to the fiscal note, is it does say a free deer license in this. It says a lifetime deer license, and it doesn't include on your list like small game lifetime license, which I think is an option, and I think there's one other. And our objections are similar to Mr. Nass's in regards to two reasons. One, the fiscal note and the impact on the DNR's budget. And then in the past, we've had a long-standing provision that if you volunteer for something for society, then you shouldn't be coming back after the fact and looking for some sort of freebie or give back, sort of a rebate sort of thing. We look at it as a volunteer system, and you know, you should be volunteering for the rationale that volunteering is, to help out and help your community, especially in the case of teaching the youth how to properly operate a firearm.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Kelleher? Be none. Mr. Meyer. I got one question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Garner. Welcome again. I think you said this, but the note you talked about on this, the fiscal note, was about lifetime deer licenses, correct?
Mr. Chair, yes.
And second question is, are you having any trouble getting people to participate in the training, getting their training so that they can give the training in bow or snow or ATV or boat or trapper or advanced hunter education? Are you having any trouble getting people for that to do those things?
Our recruitment and retention in our training programs is rather strong. The advanced hunter education program is something we should talk about at some point in time, because the ability to schedule those classes kind of has lessened. We've taken on, rather than spend a whole course on the advanced hunter ed program, we've been doing more turkey clinics, more bear clinics, more of those individualized, specialized opportunities. The number of advanced hunter education classes statewide has dwindled just because of people's inability to have the time, because people are busy. You know, these one-day clinics or half-a-day clinic where someone has a particular interest seem to be more popular than the advanced hunter education programs, but it is something we need to make sure that we're providing the opportunities to do, and we're looking at improving our teaching and our programs all the time. One of the things you're looking at, or you're going to see now, is allowing people over the age of 16 to participate. Actually, I think it's anybody can participate in the online International Hunter Education Association programs and then go to a one-day safety training clinic at a firing range and take the test and actually do the tree stand safety, the field safety training pieces that are out there. So we're trying to continually improve and look at how our programs are advancing. We participated in an audit to the International Hunter Education Association last year. They gave us several good pointers that we're trying to implement into the process as well.
Okay, any Representative Cornish?
Commissioner Lawyer, if Representative Dill and I are successful in passing this Uncase Bill requirement, would these instructors be able to carry out the proper instruction regarding the new requirements without any trouble?
Mr. Chair, members, we would still teach case guns as being a safe weapon if that's what you're asking.
So, Ms. Meyer, I assume then that your position is that an uncased gun is an unsafe weapon.
Mr. Chair, members, firearm is a mechanical weapon, mechanical machine made to fail, and that's, you know, we have some concerns about it, but we'll work our concerns through the process as we move forward.
Well, Representative Cornish, we'll have to have Beretta and Winchester come in and talk about that failure. Thank you. All right, thank you, Mr. Meyer, and any further questions for Representative Olin? There being none, will Representative Tal renews his motion to lay over this bill, House File 579, for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, the next item we have up is House File 621. This is Representative Anzell. Representative Saylor moves House File 621 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. Representative Anzell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing the bill. Essentially, what House File 621 would do is to decouple spearing prohibitions in the winter months from the slot limit prohibitions in the summer months. For the committee's information, there are approximately 15 lakes in Minnesota where spearing, winter spearing of northern pike is prohibited. In addition to that, there's an additional approximately 110 lakes in Minnesota where winter spearing of northern pike is governed by slot limits. And the slot limits are the same slot limits that pertain to the taking of northern pike with rod and reel in the summer months. The distinction is, and I'll give you an example of a lake near where I live, in northern Itasca County, Spider Lake. Spider Lake is a beautiful, clean, clear body of water where there is a protected slot for northern pike, summer and winter. And that slot is 24 to 36 inches protected slot, which means in the summertime, when you catch a northern pike by rod and reel, you land the fish, hopefully you're a pro and you don't horse that fish in, and hopefully it's in the spring rather than late in the year when that water's warmed up. You catch that fish, you net that fish, and you measure that fish. And you delicately handle that fish in such a way so that if that northern pike is within the slot limit, you release that fish back into the water. In the winter months, spearing. You're in a dark house with no windows. You are looking at a hole in the ice, 2 to 3 feet large. You have a decoy in the water, or perhaps a large sucker minnow in the water, or perhaps both, one high, one low. And you're on a lake with a protected slot, and you're moving your decoy and watching your sucker, and the fish comes in the hole. The northern will decoy, unlike other species. Northern is attracted to movement and to color, unlike most other species. And the fish will come in the hole, and you have by your stool a spear with a rope affixed to your stool, and the fish comes in, you get the tines in the water and you spear the fish. You lift the spear out of the water, you go outside, you shove that spear loose from the fish, and you think to yourself, oh boy, I don't know if I'm within the slot or not, or just how long that fish is. The fish is dead. The protected slot is 24 to 36 inches, meaning you shouldn't have speared that fish if it was 35 and a quarter or 35 and a half. But you get out your yardstick or ruler or other measuring device and you're off. You took a fish by spear in the wintertime within the slot. You're illegal. You cover the fish up in snow. You go back in the house. 10 minutes later, somebody's knocking on the fish house door. And it's your friendly conservation officer. Let's take a look at that fish. I see some blood out here. And you measure that fish, and you know darn well the conservation officer wants that fish to be legal. But it isn't. You're a half an inch off. You are given a citation, and you pay a fine, and you go home one pretty disgusted person who has been spearing, as in my case, for around 55 years. Now, the story I just told you has nothing to do with me. But that
we're on the record.
But that story is accurate, and it's repeated a few times too many, which is why I brought this bill to you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for your consideration.
Questions of Representative Amzell on House File 621. There are none. Okay, we've got some people we'd like to allow testify. Mr. Wagner.
Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee, my name is Vern Wagner. For the record, I am a spokesperson today for Anglers for Habitat. We are a group of out of the DNR roundtable, and we represent northerns, muskies, walleyes, bass fishing groups, sunfish groups. And our goal is to grow sport fishing in Minnesota and to fix, preserve the best of our sport fishing, preserve the best of our habitat, and to fix the fishing that is a problem and fix the habitat that's a problem. And our interest today is to talk about, have a conversation about that. We are not opposed to spearing. We understand the problem of taking a fish that's not in the spot limit. It's a similar problem that deer hunters have when they shoot a deer that has a spike that's 4 inches long instead of 3 inches long. And the conventional wisdom is that if you shoot a deer that the spike is too long, you shouldn't have taken that shot if you weren't sure. Or you should get your nail file out. And we believe that we want a balanced fishery. We want pike in lakes of all different sizes. We want big ones and medium-sized ones and little ones. We don't want angling practices that only leave us with little ones. Nor do we want angling practices that only take the middle. I believe, and that we believe that in our conversations I've had with many of the members of Northern Zinc, could not be here today, but our conversations has been that we want to know if these slot limits, which are causing these problems, we want to know if these slot limits actually are working. We want these limits to be researched. We need the dollars going to the DNR, which will allow them to look at it. Currently, in our current financial crunch, it's unrealistic to expect that the type of research that we need is going to occur. I think we're going to actually, the test netting and lake netting is going to be substantially decreased in the next couple of years. So the problem we have is we have over 100, maybe 110 lakes that do have these slot limits. They're part of the DNR toolbox. Do they work? We need to find out if they're working. A northern pike is a renewable resource. You know, if you catch some, more will grow to that size and you can catch more again. And that's great. But we haven't quite figured out how that works. There are some lakes where that seems to work really well without any intervention. Other lakes, we felt, the DNR and the ESOX committee of the roundtable have felt that we do need to have some intervention. But does our intervention work? So what I would ask today is that before we take the step of removing slot limit restrictions, that we take the first step, and that would be to ensure that these slot limits are tested, that there's money there to evaluate them. My lake cabin is on Lake Sullivan in Morrison County, and for 7 years we had a slot limit where you had to release every northern pike over 24 inches and under, I think, 30-something. And after years of this restriction, we found that the public was not obeying it, and the slot was taken off the lake because the fishermen simply wouldn't conform to those regulations. So, again, what I'm asking today is that we try here to grow sport fishing in Minnesota, to give spearing the opportunities they need, to give open water anglers the opportunities they need, and that we fund the research that's necessary to have a balanced fishery. Any questions?
Any questions? Representative Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, you've been fishing for a while.
Yes.
Is it possible to measure the size of the fish, the northern, before you spear it?
Swagner. When the spearing that I've done, sir, is I can approximate the size of the fish. It goes along with, oh my God, that's a large one, or maybe not so large. But I think it is possible in many cases to differentiate the fish in that split second before you throw that spear. In the same way that you need to make that differentiation when you're pulling the trigger on a firearm. There's a moment there, even if it's only a millisecond, that you know that, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't be taking this shot. Maybe this, and that's the same thing with spearing.
Question for either of them, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if, is it just during the summer months that the length limits or slot limits on, or is it summer and winter? Is it all year long?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cornish, it's identical. Summer angling, winter spearing. And that's it. Kind of the epicenter of the problem here. We can distinguish
a live fish and its length. We can distinguish a dead fish that's speared, but the problem is the fish is dead.
I was wondering, Mr. Chair, what about then, what would the effect be if you compromised and didn't have any slot limits during the winter and just had them during the summer? That way it would be fair to both the angler and the spear if they didn't have...
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cornish, that's exactly what this legislation...
This one is... Oh, I thought it just addressed the spearing.
...purports to do.
It's both of them, then, in the winter.
The language is, the commissioner shall not limit the size of a northern pike allowed to be taken by spear. And size means either or, weight or inches. And since inches is what governs our slot, protected slot now, that would be repealed for spearing.
Right.
Only.
Mr. Chair, that's what I was getting at, is that it would still be on for angling during the winter?
Representative Anzo.
Correct.
So that's why I'm saying, what about releasing them both for winter?
In other words, what Representative Cornish, you're saying is remove the slot on both angling and spearing in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cornish, I would urge the committee not to pursue that. I would like to keep it as confined to spearing as possible, especially when one considers the fact that this is an activity that is shrinking in popularity. It is done by fewer and fewer and fewer sports persons every single year. And the number of people who do this just to watch the fish rather than even spear the fish is growing as well. So I think that this will accommodate my purposes here.
I would also like to add to that, Mr. Chair. Representative Cornish, anglers today live with many restrictions. Bass tournaments, for example, cannot hold live release tournaments on slot lakes. And we believe while that's something we would like to do, we believe that that's something that the DNR has implemented those slots for a reason, and we're willing to forego putting tournaments on those lakes. And the second answer to that question is, when you're angling, you don't see the fish first. You don't know, unless it's a little sunfish, you don't really know what size fish is going to be biting on your hook. The difference is, with spearing, you have a general approximation of what size that fish is. So you can pick and choose. So if you're continually picking a fish that is so close to the slot limit that you're going to be a half inch or a quarter inch one way or the other, well, I suspect that you maybe need to look at what you're doing.
Representative Anzo.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in all due respect to my new friend here, when a northern comes in the hole, especially if you're in 10 feet of water or 11 feet of water, and if it happens to be a dark-colored lake, it's impossible, with that degree of accuracy and certainty, impossible, unless you pick that decoy up and that northern comes right up almost out of the hole, and they will do that. Then you get a better crack at it, but most of the time, and I know Representative Hackbarth remembers this, most of the time they're flying through that hole and you're throwing when that fish is darn near down the lake. So that doesn't work, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Magnum.
The spearing from a dark house is a lot different than the spearing I used to do from the shore. Representative Anzelk, how many people actually dark house spear? You mentioned that it's dying. And then how many fish would potentially be affected here? I'm kind of thinking out loud, what about one tag per season or something if you get a unslotted fish? Sometimes do you spear more than one a day? How does it work?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, very good question. The spearing limit is the same as the angling limit, I believe, and it's three. And your other question had to do with the number of dark house licenses that are sold in Minnesota. I don't know the number, but it's an ever-decreasing number. And on the thousand or so lakes where I live, most lakes have nobody spearing.
At all. Mr. Boggess up here to answer that question. That second question.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Corning.
While he's coming up here, I was just going to say, I sympathize with Representative Ansel. I would like to find a solution there. I didn't mean to think that there was against this bill. I'm just trying to find some compromise where we could accomplish both purposes. I used to spear a lot.
I thought maybe you were suggesting having a case spear. Mr. Boggess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Ed Boggess with the DNR Division of Fish and Wildlife. And I know I sent that number to the committee not long ago. I have a lot of statistics with me tonight. I'm thinking it's in the range of 15,000 dark house licenses, but I'd have to get you the exact number. It has been declining for the last 40 or 50 years, as Representative Ansel said.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Boggess, I know there's logistics involved now with our ELS system, but don't we use some tagging for some species that we still have a tag? Is the tag always printable, or do we ever use an unprintable? Or we could have a printable tag, but you'd have to have like the thing we use for deer hunting that would be that filament that might go through. I'm wondering if we had a single tag offered if somebody was to spear an unslotted fish.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we do have tags for a variety of species. We do have one tag for fish. It's the sturgeon tag, which is you get one tag per year. You get so that's our first venture into issuing tags through the ELS for fish. So there is that capability.
Right.
Mr. Boggess, we just we've looked up. You have 15,002 were sold last year.
I was close.
You were very close. As a percentage, that's real close. Other questions? We'll probably have some more, but we've got some more testifiers if you could hang tight there for a moment. All right, the next, Mr. Ness, if you'd like to come forward.
Okay.
Welcome again.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Lance Ness, President of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, and today representing primarily the American Fisheries Society. They believe in individual lake management. Our major concern was that this did not affect the designated musky lakes and that spearing wouldn't be allowed on those designated musky lakes. I believe this only regards northern lakes, so again, we're looking for a little clarification here from the author. And then also I have some gentlemen with me today. I think they're already signed up for your testimony from Muskies, Minnesota Muskie Alliance also.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Representative Ansel, did you have a comment on that?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. This legislation would not pertain to designated musky lakes.
Okay. And Mr. Underhill. Welcome again.
Chairman Dill, representative, I'm John Underhill, co-chair of the Minnesota Musky Alliance. I have a couple concerns with this. I guess the impact of spearing, there's been some question on that, and research creel surveys that have been done in the past 60 or 80 years. The way that it looks is the trend hasn't changed, even though the number of anglers, of dark house anglers, has gone down. Their creel surveys and research shows about 15% of the northern pike yield and 22% of the overall weight are taken a year by dark house angling. And we've been going through a process for 3 years now. Well, it was November, October of 2006 when it started. Working together with the Dark House Association, Northern Zinc, other concerned anglers, unaffiliated affiliate anglers with organizations. And for those years, we've been trying to come to some solution for this slot limit situation and the effect that it has on the dark house anglers. And we've came up with a lot of scenarios over all those meetings. And we repeatedly hear from the biologists and the people that are working on this that if you allow the harvest of the fish in that slot, it will negate the regulation, and they might as well just eliminate the regulation altogether, winter and summer. The benefits of that catch and release regulation, according to research that's available with the American Fisheries Society, is 15% non-compliance with that catch and release eliminates the regulation. The large pike, 24 inches, those are the fish that are getting harvested by winter and summer anglers. That's when people start taking fish. And that's why that regulation is where it starts at that point. And there was some question earlier about research that's been done. Rod Pierce has just completed a study that's under peer review right now that kind of opened a lot of our eyes, because there's been a lot of questions about, do these regulations work? And just a couple of snippets from his research, and this spans since the 70s, and there's lakes that have the regulation, similar lakes that don't have the regulation, and they use those lakes in conjunction to determine whether or not the regulations were working. If a lake had 20% of the pike over 24 inches before the regulation, after the regulation was implemented, the average was raised to 38%. They added one more fish over 30 inches for every 20 fish in the lake. So their conclusion is that it's had a fairly large influence on the number of big pike in the lake. It doubled the percentage of fish over 20 inches and raised the average 3 to 4 inches per fish in those bodies, like on average. And the problem is there were some lakes that the regulation just didn't work. And there was really no understanding why they didn't work on some lakes and they did on others. And they've eliminated those lakes that it didn't work on to some degree. Some of the lakes are probably still in the study. But there's good indications and good research as to why those lakes probably don't recover. And when you eliminate the large fish repeatedly, and it only takes 5 generations of doing this, you create a fish that will have a substantial decline in reproduction, the egg volume, the larval size, its ability to eat and convert that to energy, the number of vertebrae in the fish. There's a lot of problems that come with taking all the big fish out of the system. And that may be part of the problem in these lakes. These lakes that have these slot limits are lakes that are problem lakes. They've got a large numbers of small pike, and these regulations are being used as a way to increase the average size of the pike, and it has worked very well since they've been implemented. I don't feel that the number of lakes, that 125, is an unreasonable amount of lakes, considering the widespread problems with small northern pike and the situations that come from that. There's roughly 4,000 lakes, I believe, and that would have to be double-checked with the DNR, that you can drive right out to, and you can spear, you can summer angle, you can put tip-ups and harvest fish any way you want. And this represents, I haven't done the math, but I think it's probably less than a half a percent. And the real issue, that the real thing that really is a problem for me, is the eliminating the commissioner's power to protect the fishery. And when you say that the commissioner can't dictate what happens for size of fish for one specific group, you almost have to do that for the other two groups, the winter angling and the summer angling. I don't think the summer anglers are going to be too happy knowing that these other people are able to do something that they can't do. It drives a wedge between sportsmen, and that's something that I have concerns with. And that's basically all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Vanville.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, we're not talking about spearing muskies. Secondly, a speared northern that's within the protected slot and measured cannot be released. And thirdly, this is an enforcement issue as well as a resource issue. And I'm just concerned that we might be confusing the issue here a little bit. We're talking just northern, we're talking just wintertime spearing, we're talking just 15,000 dark house licenses. We're not talking about preserving the lake for large muskies. We're talking about recreational pursuit and harvest. And I would say that if there is a conflict, it's a conflict between muskie advocates and everybody else. Because once muskies are introduced into a lake, northern spearing it's almost a given that the lake is prohibited from any kind of northern spearing, whether it's in a slot limit or outside the slot.
Questions for Mr. Anderson? Thank you.
Could I address that quickly?
Go ahead.
That I'm not here as anti-spearing anything. I'm here to represent the resource. And knowing what I've learned over the past 2.5-3 years in these meetings, we've had this conversation repeatedly as how to make this happen. And we've been beating our head against the wall, just as everyone has, trying to find a solution to get the spears out there and not have them feel like they're breaking the law, or potentially could have that possibility of breaking the law. And it's not something with muskies. This is not a muskie issue. I'm not here because I feel there's any threat to muskies. I was in the dark house yesterday myself and saw some muskies and saw some northern pike, and I don't see how anybody could not distinguish the difference between the two.
Okay. We have, thank you very much. We have Mr. Kim. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I sincerely appreciate their opportunity to come and share some points of view on this bill. I greatly appreciate the opportunity. My name is Rob Kim. I live in St. Paul, and I am a member of the Anglers for Habitat organization, Ronald Fern Wagner. I want to express to you some significant concerns about this legislation. My concerns, fall in three main areas. Number one is that so far in this discussion, I haven't heard anyone really address the reason for the slot limits
that we're talking about. The pike fishery in Minnesota has undergone a documented decline since the middle of the last century, basically. Even earlier than that, there's historical data, real survey records, that show that Minnesota's pike fishery is not what it was, and it is now not what it is capable of being. And as the DNR has looked at angler interest, angler desires, and what the Minnesota anglers want out of their fisheries, there has been strong and sustained support for improving the pike fishery in the state of Minnesota. And one of the best available tools for the DNR to be able to achieve that objective and answer that public desire for a better pike fishery is the use of harvest restrictions on northern pike, and that is primarily the slot limit. The protected slots restrict the harvest of northern pike at a real key stage in the northern pike development, where they're making that jump from what is relatively a small, immature fish up to what I think most anglers consider a quality size fish, which is, you know, something over 24, 25 to up to 30 inches. And let those fish develop into what's potentially a trophy, which, you know, you could say that's 36 to 40 inches and beyond. There are lakes in the state of Minnesota that are capable of producing that class of fish. We have some now. And this legislation, frankly, it directly undercuts that objective by eliminating the protection that is provided to those to that segment of the population in these lakes. And we are talking about a very small number of bodies of water. It is a tiny fraction of the overall pike fishery in the state of Minnesota that falls under these harvest restrictions. And, you know, as Mr. Underhill pointed out, it takes very little harvest in terms of, you know, the number of fish taken out of a population before these slot limits, which are working. And the DNR has significant data that points out their success. It takes very little harvest before those restrictions, those regulations stop working. And it is my concern that this legislation would undermine the significant process that the state has already made in developing better pike fisheries. My second concern is, again, as Mr. Underhill stated, to me, it's a little bit troubling that we would be putting ourselves in a position where we are disallowing the DNR commissioner from managing a fishery based on the best available science by completely ruling out harvest restriction as a tool. Harvest restrictions like protected slots or one over regulations where only one fish over a certain size can be kept, those are all part of a large suite of management tools that the DNR has to manage these fisheries. And for northern pike in particular, the protected harvest slot is a very important tool. And in fact, out of, from years and years of effort by the DNR, it is the single most effective means for developing a quality northern pike fishery in the state of Minnesota. My final concern about this piece of legislation is that, and I'll be quite frank, it seems to me that this legislation lacks a fundamental element of fairness. What this legislation would effectively do, and all due respect to the author, is it would set up dark house spearing and dark house spearers as a privileged class of outdoors people. We would not, I don't think we would go along with this same kind of legislation if we applied it to deer hunting, where we said, I mean, a harvested fish is a harvested fish. It doesn't matter if it was taken with a hook and line or a spear or anything else. But if we said you're allowed to take one white-tailed deer unless you use a 30-30, and then you can take three. We don't say that if you use a 20-gauge, you can shoot a hen pheasant. That is, in effect, what this legislation would do. It would be to remove the restrictions and remove the obligation to follow the DNR's regulations from a very, very small class of resource users. And to me, that there's a fundamental question of fairness there that I'm that I'm struggling with this legislation. One of the things that the Department of Natural Resources has stated over and over again, as it has discussed and researched and analyzed pike management, for the better part of 30 years, trying to find ways to improve Minnesota's pike fishery, one theme that comes up over and over again is that if a lake is going to be managed for northern pike, that harvest by both winter angling, including spearing, and summer angling must both be managed in a similar manner. And I think that this, that management philosophy and that management objective is really what the heart of at the heart of this matter. And with that, I will close, and I thank you very much for your time.
Representative Gordon.
Mr. Chairman, I'm having a little problem with this fairness doctrine here. They are a very small class of fishermen, and basically because they've been pushed into that. I mean, you guys speed around in your boats and fish, and the fishermen aren't trying to catch little northerns either. I mean, give me a break. They got lures this long and jerk baits and red eyes the size of dinner plates. I mean, so you guys are trying to catch big fish too, and you got all year to do it. And you got these bass trackers and spend $1,000 and have tournaments. Here you got a guy that wants to walk out in a wood shack and sit on a 5-gallon bucket and a spear, most primitive and probably the first method of taking fish there was, and you're talking about fairness. So I think the fairness thing is a little bit in your advantage, both in time and equipment and sophistication. You got video cameras and all sorts of things and live bait and jerk baits, and all these guys just got a spear and a decoy. So I kind of sympathize with Representative Amzoff's legislation. I wish there was some way to work it out, but there's got to be. I can't think that the impact from December 1st or so when spearing opens for that short time and the slot limits and a few lakes and that percent of fishing is going to have that big an impact on the fishery that there can't be something worked out here for the spearers. So.
Representative Amzoff.
No further comment.
Thank you very
Thank
much,
you.
Mr. Tim.
Thank you.
Roger, Mr. Gansel. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Roger Gashel. I'm with the Dark House Association. A few things I'd like to bring up that were brought up before. We talked about license sales being down and going down. I think one of the reasons here, first of all, we have around 16,000 spearing licenses. But what we forget, the people that bring this up, is that not too many years ago, we took away the requirement that a person over 65 had to have a license. So we have probably double that number. In other words, we show 16,000 licenses sold, but every senior that's out there doesn't need a license. He can't be counted. We have a lot of them in the association. We have close to 3,000-4,000 members right here in the state. So those people aren't counted. That's the first thing. License sales are going down all over the state for a number of reasons, fishing licenses. What are those reasons? There's a lot. Various things can be such as maybe the kids want to play with the computers more. Whatever. But a big part of that has to do with all the restrictions we keep putting on these lakes. One lake, or the next lake, we're going 20 more. How many people are not renewing a license because of restrictions on lakes? Give you an example here of Todd County, just west of this, out here a ways. Back there, we talk about fairness. The fisheries manager out there, who is recently retired, he'd made a statement once that nobody should keep any northern pike. You should just let them live. He put restrictions on big birch, on big swan, on cedar. All the major lakes in that county are under restrictions at this point, with the exception of one. There was one left, and I listened to him when he said, this is the perfect lake. He said, this is the best lake, and was asked, then why wasn't this the first one? There was 100 and some people at that meeting, and he even indicated that The reason, one of the reasons was that the Lake Association wanted these restrictions. Well, it happened to be three officials from the Lake Association that stood up and said, we don't want any restrictions. We've never heard this before. You haven't talked to us. When the vote was down, it was 100 and some versus 2. There was a legislator out there and was disgusted with the whole process. So a couple things there. So are we losing revenue because of the slot limits? I think we are, across the board. We say we want something fair here. In the winter, and I think Representative Cornish, maybe you hit something on the head here, to make it fair. Why not do this, I know it's not in Representative Anfeck's bill, but how about taking restrictions off for everybody in the winter? In the winter, we allow two lines for fishing. In the summer, we only allow one line. So what would be the difference? So here we've got two things here. We do have different restrictions in the winter for fishing than we have in the summer. Another thing that is correct, if we catch a, you know, let's say we're out fishing in the winter, and we allow Northern Pike to take that bait and run, he's going to swallow that. And we start cranking and yanking him, and he's trying to go this way, and we're yanking his stomach and everything. He's a dead fish when you get him up. When you're going to release him, he's pretty well dead. I mean, you put him back in a hole, well, it's catch and release. He's not going to live. He may go down a little way, and a day he's dead, if that long. That's catch and release. If we did that with a spear, and we were an eighth of an inch off, and we got caught, we'd pay a hefty fine. So if we throw that back in the hole, that isn't catch and release. That's wanton waste. We put two fish back. One is catch and release. The other one is wanton waste. We're throwing away a perfectly good fish in the summer. So there is merit to Representative Anzark's bill. The increasing lakes with regulations, I recall when, as a matter of fact, I think it was my recommendation over 15 years ago to the DNR that why don't we have some trophy Northern Pike lakes, 20 or so. I talked with them, came back, and they said, you know, that's a real good idea. We're going to do that. We're talking about it. And I'd mentioned, well, 12, and then they had mentioned around 36 lakes. I said, okay, I mentioned two dozen, I guess another 30, you know, another few. They came out when I got a phone call before it was released to the press and said, we've settled on our lakes and there are 66 of them. I said, what happened to the 36? Well, we wanted a few more. And our fisheries chief, Ron Pyre at the time, stood up at the round table and stated, we've got this toolbox now. We've done 66 lakes for Northern Pike, and we are through with the Northern Pike regs. We're all done. Now we're going to do regulations on walleyes and panfish and so on. Well, that didn't happen. We're going and going, and there's more and more. So actually, we're up to 120-some now. What is really happening with these lakes? Are they increasing? There are some people that have testified and that believe that everything in Minnesota should be catch and release. I happen to like to eat a few fish, and so does my family. But you can't eat a Northern Pike that's under 24 inches. I mean, you can if you want, you know, with all the bones, how are you going to eat them? Jack Wingate, before he retired, I had a long talk with him at the DNR, and I asked him, how big does a Northern Pike get normally in Minnesota? And he said, 36 inches is about the limit. He said, you're going to find those fish that are 40, 41. He said, that's kind of like the NFL, isn't it? He said, the average guy doesn't weigh 320 pounds like these guys in the NFL. He said, a Northern Pike is going to get about 36, and that's it. One of the biologists up that from the Bemidji area told me when these lakes first come out, he said, the entire northern part, he said, they're on restrictions. He said there's one or two of all those lakes that could even grow northern pike over 36 inches. He said it's a farce. He's no longer with the DNR shortly after that. That's his name, is Stephen Bowe. So, again, most lakes can't grow a pike over 34 or over 36 inches. And I've questioned the DNR and I've said, what are you trying to accomplish? We show that these are working. You say that there are the northern pike average 22 inches in length here. So you, after 10 years, these fish have now grown an inch and a half or 2 inches bigger. 10 years. So what is the end game plan? When we put the restrictions on, what is the end game? How big do we want these northern pike to grow? We want them to grow to 28. Nobody can answer that. Then when they get that big, then what are we going to do? Are we going to open it up? They can't answer that. So basically what we're doing, every time we put these slot limits on, those lakes, very seldom, most of them will never be opened again. And we're going to lose more sales.
Well, we've got 10 minutes left, and I need to get up a couple more people.
Thank you. I think I'm in favor of this bill, and perhaps even Representative Cornish's idea on that. And, I think it's sound.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Sprick.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay, we're going to have to get DNR up here as well. So,
I'll make it brief. I'm right. Tim Spreck. I'm the Metro Chapter President of the Minnesota Dark House, and I also sit on the State Board. I just want to talk for a few minutes. You know, we have been over slots, and we've talked about slots, and I'm not going to beat a dead horse. We have serious problems with the methodology and the study results, but that's not why I'm up here. What I'm going to talk about is the philosophy of the Dark House spear fisherman. The thing that you need to realize or to remember is that as a dark house spear fisherman, we are basically blue-collar in nature. We're working class. We're not sport fishermen. We are food fishermen. We are going out to put some food on the table. Our families enjoy it. And it's part of the culture of what has made dark house spearing as great as it is today. So the thing that we'd like the DNR to know, and we'd also like you committee members to know, northern pike and muskies should be managed in two different ways. Muskies are generally managed for the sport fishermen. The muskie advocates want larger and larger trophy fish, and that's their objective, and we have no problem with that, and we support that because that's what their constituency base tells them that they want. Our constituency base tells us that they want to go out and take a fish that they can take home and eat. We fully support the 1 over 30. We want to be responsible about managing our resource so that it will be sustained, and we believe that it will be. But we also want to be able to take fish in that slot limit because that's where your bread and butter is. When you're out in the spear house and you're trying to determine whether it's 24 to 36, basically if you want to obey the law, you have to give up a window that's roughly 22 to 38, assuming there even are any 38-inch fish. But you're giving up a lot larger window. So basically what we're doing is we're passing on legal fish because we want to be people that are obeying the law. And as a result, a majority of our people are saying, why should I even buy a license? You can't eat anything under 22 because of the Y bones. And you can't take anything else because the lakes basically top out at 36. So effectively what you're doing with a slot limit on these lakes is you are closing the spearing. And that's not something that we want to do. Minnesota has a spearing heritage that goes back a long way, and we would like to see it preserved. The other thing I wanted to briefly touch on is when the DNR adopted this policy that they wanted to promote trophy pike, it was really based on a flawed survey. The survey was, would you like to have the opportunity to catch a trophy northern pike? And everybody immediately responded. I think it was 90%. Absolutely, I would love to. But the thing that they didn't do is that they didn't qualify it. They didn't say, would you like to catch a northern pike if it meant that you could never spear anything else? And the resounding response would, of course, been no. So So we question not only the slot limits and their effectiveness, we question the philosophy of promoting northern pike as a trophy fish. There are going to be plenty of trophy pike. Don't get me wrong. The lakes are full of them. But we also want to make sure that we can coexist with any potential sport fishermen that are looking for trophies. And when you take away our slot, we've got nothing left. So I appreciate your time, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Speck? All right, thank you. Ms. Vaughn. Welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know you don't have much time. I'd like to just express some concerns that we have. Before I do that, I would just point out, and we've got this on our website too, but we have gone through a very extensive planning process for northern pike and muskie management. We had a wide cross-section of people interested in esophage or northerns and muskies that were represented on a workshop. You've heard from a number of them tonight on both sides of this issue. I think it illustrates, the testimony that you've heard illustrates that there are a lot of varied opinions out there. I think everybody does agree they're interested in seeing more big pike, and they are one of the rarer things that we have in the state of Minnesota. Just for a little bit more background for the committee, we have about 3,350 northern pike lakes in the state. We currently have special regulations of various types, the most common being protected slots on about 115 of those. This plan calls for going up to 125 perhaps at the top. I'm not sure about the figures that Mr. Geschel cited earlier on earlier discussions on this, but this is the most extensive process that we've gone on to where do we ultimately want to be on managing for northern pike and muskies. Despite the fact that it's a relatively low number of participants in dark house spearing, it is, northerns are very aggressive fish, as has been talked about tonight. They are very vulnerable to harvest by both the hook and line and by spearing. When we did a study a few years ago on harvest of northern pike, looking at the population of northerns in the lake, an average of 27% of the northern pike population over 24 inches was harvested by spearing, and an average of 47% by angling. So certainly angling has a much higher impact than spearing, but they both have a significant impact. And it's also true that it doesn't take very much additional harvest to negate a special regulation. And some of the special regs, and we talk about some of it in the plan, but some of the special regs do appear to be working. It's a long-term process. It's a gradual, because fish take a number of years to grow to those larger sizes. So generally, we don't know if it's working for 10 years or so when we do an experimental reg, and that's the typical length of an experimental regulation before we decide to drop it, modify it, or make it into a special regulation going forward. So Representative Anzo, you know, made a very compelling case for the problems that it creates, and we understand the abundance of caution that a person spearing on a lake with slot limits has to exercise. But we're very concerned that if we can't maintain those same regulations for that winter harvest, it is a significant part of the harvest, and it could negate the impact of those regulations. So we are concerned with this bill and our ability to be able to produce those larger pike in those places.
Questions for Mr. Bogus?
Mr. Bogus, you're talking about the percentage of fish harvested by angling and spearing. That included summer and winter angling, then, I suppose.
Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cornish, I have the actual paper here from the Journal of Fisheries Management, and I believe it was only summer angling, not winter. It was summer angling and winter spearing that I was referencing. So I think the winter angling would be on top of those figures.
Cornish.
Well, that's just what I was thinking. I'm thinking if you're talking about summer angling and winter angling, the the low amount that you're actually taking by spearing. That's why I'm just wondering how much of an impact it would have if you would take the regulations off during the winter, during the time the ice, the water is covered with ice. If you didn't enforce slot limits at that time, how much of an impact would it have in the actual population? So that's what I was trying to get at, run through my mind here.
Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cornish, I'm looking at the published study, and I can't see where it references winter angling. It just says spearing harvest, 27% of the fish 24 inches and larger. Summer angling, 47% of fish greater than 24 inches, and I'm not seeing an estimate for winter angling.
Okay. Representative, the last word.
Well, just simply, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for your indulgence. I think we had a good conversation, and please be kind.
Anyone in the audience? I think we got everybody. Well, we've already had you up. Anyone else want to testify for or against the bill? We're actually out of time, so you can just contact us, and we'll let the committee know what you have to say. Now we're adjourned.